Welcome to another thrilling episode Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, joined by, as always, Bill Bregoli.
Hello there.
And Bill McCuddy.
Mayday, mayday.
And we're talking Sully.
I may have to land this thing in the Hudson.
The movie about Captain Sully Sullenberger. We'll talk about that in a second. Other Clint Eastwood films that are available on demand and DVD, and a whole look at his career. Plus, we'll talk about some movies that are also on demand and DVD, like The Meddler with Susan Sarandon and Other People with...
Other people
like Molly Shannon and a new Meg Ryan film.
Paul Dooley made her directorial debut
in a movie called Ithaca, which...
Didn't she directed some thriller like a bunch of years ago?
No, this is her directorial debut.
All right.
And Bill's checking that while we're doing. Anyway, let's start talking about Sully. Okay, so Sully. So in case, everybody knows the story. Tom Hanks stars as Captain. First of all, Clint Eastwood directed this, and Hanks is Captain Sully Sullenberger, who miraculously landed a commercial jet in the middle of the Hudson River in January of 2009 after a flock of birds got stuck in and then blew out both engines, and miraculously all 155 people on board survived, and Sully became a hero. But the focus of the film is as much on the flight and that incredible landing as it is on this investigation that was conducted afterwards. Which sort of put Sully on trial, the National Transportation Safety Board.
A ridiculous trial.
Feeling was that Sully could have made it back to a New York airport like LaGuardia or Teterboro, and which is what they did in the computer simulations, and not have endangered everybody's lives. So what do you think of it, Bill Bregoli?
I wouldn't want to talk to the NTSB after a thing like that. That was interesting. We got to see the plane go down a million times. You only got to see the geese for a second. I would have liked more geese. And how come you're the only person from New York One who's not in this movie?
Yeah, that's true. Right.
The janitor is in it.
Yeah.
Every on-camera talent is in it.
The entire air staff of New York One went down to the Hudson, apparently, and pulled people out of the water.
Well, I think that's they did, actually. Like. I mean, and for those of you listening around the country, you know this is an after show, but maybe you don't know that New York One is like a full-time 24-hour news channel with one beat. The city of New York. So if you're going to make a New York movie, and it's happened on many occasions about the World Trade Center or any dramatic thing that's happened or Ghostbusters, who are you going to call? You're going to call New York One.
Well, as Bill said, this is an after show to a TV show that we do that airs locally on New York One here in New York and nationally on Time Warner Cable called Talking Pictures. And... yes, there is a lot of New York One heavily in the film, but that really, you know, I divorce myself from that when I look at the movie. I actually like the movie a lot.
Bill and I laugh.
Bill, before I check in, I like the film, but I know you're not thrilled with the film, McCuddy.
I was disappointed because there's so much promise in the first 90 seconds of this movie. The first 90 seconds might be the best opening to a movie I've seen in the last 10 years. And I thought to myself, oh boy, this is great. I don't know this whole story. I don't know Sully's story. And the truth is, we do know most of it. And the truth is, there may not really be a movie here because Clint Eastwood refuses to paint this guy in any other light than a national hero. So it promises some warts and all stuff. And the script, which I thought was very underwritten, shows us some moments like when he's daydreaming and also having some of these same images that might have suggested that maybe he had some mental instability, but Eastwood will not go there. You know who wants to go there? Tom Hanks. He's got a sullen look on his face through the whole movie. He smiles once on the David Letterman program. Other than that, he's not a happy guy. He's trying to bring more dimension to this character, but it's not there.
I feel for Laura Linney, who had to do all her acting on
horrible.
The phone.
Yeah.
Did you like it, Bregoli?
I did like it, though. But
I like
you know
it
what?
Too.
It started by the end of it, and it's only, 90 minutes long? It's
86, I think. It's his shortest movie ever.
Yeah. He has a new editor, apparently.
But it felt longer. Yeah. Well, then not a new editor. It's an assistant editor who's been working with him since 2006.
It didn't need to be longer. It was the time.
Oh, it was right length. But even at that short length, it felt a little repetitious for me. I'm seeing that plane go down a bunch of times in that movie.
Here's why I like the film, because what I think Clint Eastwood did here was take a story that everybody knows the outcome of the story. I mean, and I did not know that, you know, that he was taken to task, that, you know, that this dramatic landing that, you know, according to this movie, they did, you know, many, they kept running it through computer simulations, and they, every time they ran it, and I'm not going to tip off what happens in terms of their findings, but every time they ran it through computer simulations, the plane landed safely at Teterboro Airport, which is a few miles out from New York, or LaGuardia Airport. And he's just sticking to his guns, and he's saying, no, you're not, I'm telling you that if, I don't care what your computer simulations are saying, you know, if
they don't
if,
add if, the human factor.
Right, if you don't land on the, if I didn't land on the Hudson, it would have been a fatal crash. And I even started to have my doubts. I'm like saying to myself, okay, this is an interesting way into the story. Like I'm saying, maybe he could have made it back to LaGuardia, you know, so I think that he found a way to, you know, make it somewhat suspenseful and exciting. Secondly, I think the CGI in this is remarkable. I mean, I'm actually, you know, we all know this, that footage of the people standing on the wings that we've seen in the news, you know, dozens of times, waiting for the Coast Guard, the New York Coast Guard, and the, you know, to pick them up, the New York boats. But I felt like I was on the plane or in the cockpit with these people. And the that landing sequence is phenomenal. That opening sequence that you talk about, Bill,
that's movie making 101 now.
But it was
though.
Very exciting.
It's movie making 101.
I agree with you.
Good CGI. Oh, congratulations!
It's a very satisfying film that does justice to an event that's been dubbed the Miracle
on the
Hudson.
He never talks to his three daughters ever. In the whole thing.
Who cares?
You've got to be kidding me.
Who cares?
His kids don't want to talk to him when they see on the TV that the plane landed in
It's about this incident.
Laura Linney is horribly underwritten.
I would agree that the whole show was Tom Hanks, and he gives a really understated, quiet performance there. He's cool and calm under pressure, but yet you see him being haunted by these the horror of what he just went through, and I think he really pulls that off very well. And yes, Laura Linney completely underwritten. Aaron Eckhart as his co-pilot, also completely underwritten. And the passengers.
And badly written.
And the little backstories on the passengers.
Those I didn't like. I would have drowned those passengers.
That was
so
out of an Irwin Allen. That was out of a.
Out of airport.
Yeah, out of airport. They're wheeling the grandmother through in a wheelchair, and she wants to buy a snow globe. And
the guy is like, well, you're like, please, can we get on the plane? No, it's closed. All right. It's the golf game, you know, right? So I agree. But that said, I liked Hanks. I liked the structure of the movie. It made something exciting and suspenseful, to reiterate, that was not that I thought would
you
be
know what
like
we can also
boring.
Point out about you? You moved your seats during the movie because you were way too close, weren't
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah. Well, Neil Rosen does not like to sit too close to IMAX. And let me also mention, this movie does not need to be IMAX.
There is no reason.
In fact, if you're thinking about it, you could wait for video on demand to see this movie, in my opinion.
I think that it did well. The IMAX screen that we all saw it on was on 42nd Street in the Times Square area, and it was not this huge IMAX screen that they have on 68th Street.
No, we in New York finally call it the FOMAX.
Yes, it is FOMAX. Right.
If we saw it on a really big
IMAX screen, maybe we would have felt differently about the IMAX aspect. I mean, other than them running it through an IMAX projector, that screen doesn't look that much bigger than a regular movie screen. The reason I moved back is I like to see the whole frame in one shot.
Good to know.
Well, he brought it up. Well, anyway, you know, this is Clint Eastwood's 35th film. I mean, that as a director, that's a lot of movies.
Well, he's trying to make like a movie. He's the horse sees the barn. Let's be candid. I mean, the guy's in great shape at 85 or 86, whatever he is.
How old's Woody Allen?
They're both in their 80s, and they're both making a movie a year. And they both seem to suffer from the same problem to me, which is they look like they're making a movie a year. So every now and then Woody Allen has a great movie, and every now and then Clint Eastwood lately has a good movie. I loved Million Dollar Baby.
I hated
Bloodwork. Bloodwork is like a CSI episode. And
well, really
wastes Angelica Houston.
You didn't like Gran Torino.
I hated Gran Torino.
I like Gran Torino. I thought it was fun.
I mean, he's good in it. He can certainly direct himself well enough.
He knows how to direct himself very well. Very, very well. I mean, you go back to Play Misty for Me, which is his first directorial effort. Do you remember that film?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, first of all, he's a chameleon as a director. I mean, he does all different types of things. Play Misty for Me, I mean, he's a disc jockey who... is being stalked by a lunatic female fan, you know?
The mom on Arrested Development, for people who aren't old enough to have seen a 1967 movie. It's Jessica Walters, who's also great in Archer.
Well, okay, so there's that. I mean, I felt that Unforgiven, which won, I believe, Best Picture at the Oscars that year, was the culmination of everything that he learned doing all as an actor, doing all those Westerns for all those years. And he had also directed a couple of Westerns before he got into Pitt, too.
He directed Space Cowboys, too, or not?
No,
did he do that?
Tail Rider.
Yeah.
And
he did Mystic River.
He did Mystic, right. So
Mystic River,
a
I like.
Kind of film. And, you know, he did those two movies in 1 year. You spoke about doing a movie a year. He did Letters from Iwo Jima.
Yeah, well, that was one long shoot that he just cut into two.
I think he has more hits than misses. I mean, Jersey Boys was a miss. I don't think he had any, real flavor for that particular material. I thought it was great on stage. By the way, they just announced Jersey Boys is closing after 11 years. It's closing on Broadway. Just came out yesterday. But
Went to that, where would you sit in the theater?
I would try to sit in the center of the orchestra if I could get a seat. But, the guy, I think he's a very good director. I mean, do you think he'll be, 35 films as a director is like a remarkable number, but yet don't you think he'll be remembered more as an actor than he will for a director when it's all said and done?
I think at the end he'll be remembered as one of the most successful writer-actors, the person who made the transition.
Writer-director-actor.
Like the best transition from actor basically to director.
I think, what do you think?
Give me a better example.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another example.
Well, while you think of that, I think that his roles in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Well, in Dirty Harry, they're all iconic. There's no question about that.
So iconic. So huge that.
Okay, so the lead in his obit. The lead is in obit is he was an actor, da-da-da-da-da-da. Later in his career became a successful director of da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, it's the actor thing. You don't lead with, and even Unforgiven, which is, an Oscar-winning film. He stars in that film, so he's the actor in that film. So I think, what's the one that he did with, in the Line of Fire, when they're the Secret Service guys?
Yeah.
And he's in, and who, was it Rene Russo?
She's in that film, yes.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the movies.
But he didn't direct that, I don't think.
Did he direct it? Maybe not. I don't know.
We talked about it on the show, and that's what.
Well, in a lot of the movies that he does direct, he stars in them. So audiences, they don't really care. I mean, Spielberg, it's directed by Spielberg. Oh, it's directed by Scorsese. Oh, it's directed by Francis Ford Coppola. But I mean, the fact that he's in most of these movies that he directed. I think, again, the performance in the public's mind will overshadow the fact that it's in the public's mind that he directed the movie, and it's like, I loved him in Unforgiven.
Well, the public doesn't care about directors.
And even in
the public doesn't care.
Even in Million Dollar Baby, which is a Hilary Swank Academy Award-winning thing, I mean, he's in the movie. He's the guy that,
That's a great movie.
Takes her under his wing.
Paul Haggis wrote that, right?
I don't know.
The guy
who
wrote Crash.
Yeah. But, can you think of a lot of Clint Eastwood? I mean, he's not in Jersey Boys, So I think the acting. I think he's a very good director.
He's smart enough not to do cameos in his.
You
own
think
films.
He's better at one type of film? I mean, I think that my favorite film by him is actually nothing like you would think of a Clint Eastwood movie from an acting standpoint or a directorial standpoint, and that is The Bridges of Madison County. Which is with Meryl.
Which is a god awful Hallmark card, as I said on the show today.
I loved it. It moves me.
You know what I don't like about his movies? The music.
He does the music, doesn't
he? Yeah, and I don't like his music, frankly. It's usually him and his son going plinka-plinka on a piano.
He's a big jazz guy.
Which goes back to that movie.
Well,
that
he thinks movies are like jazz.
What's
Around Midnight. No. About Dexter. Sunday Blues.
It starts with a B.
Well, all right.
Yes. Isn't that him? Didn't he do that? No.
Bird. Oh, yeah, he did Bird. Yeah, right.
Do you have a favorite Clint Eastwood film, either as an actor and as a director, Bill Bergoli? Well, while you ponder that one, do you, Bill?
I like Million Dollar Baby a lot.
Yeah.
I think his acting is outstanding in that, and I like that. The movie to me is very nuanced, and I made my mom watch that movie, didn't tell her it was a boxing movie. She got 10 minutes into it and said, "This is a boxing movie?" I said, "Just stay with it." And she loved that movie.
So
it was her favorite movie that year.
Million Dollar Baby, without sounding too...
Morgan Freeman is the voiceover.
Well, we see movies early. We all get screeners. And I remember they sent us the award screener, and I watched it with my wife. And this was way before it opened, and I knew nothing about the movie like your mother, other right. than I think it's a boxing movie, female boxing. And then when that turn comes in the middle of the movie, I didn't expect, like the movie was out and I knew this was going to happen. I'm like, oh, this is a completely different kind of movie, you know? So I like that movie. I really like Million Dollar Baby. But my favorite as a director is The Bridges of Madison County. As an actor, I'd say the first Dirty Harry movie or Good, Bad, and the Ugly. The third in the Spaghetti Western Sergio Leone trilogy.
He does a lot of just showing up in those. I mean, he doesn't really have any lines.
But it's such a great film. I mean, Eli Wallach.
Just squints.
You know, one knew the grave, and one knew the cemetery, the marker on the
grave. Right,
It's just great. And
cool
Lee
idea.
Cleef, it's terrific. And it's the third one. I mean, the first one was A Fistful of Dollars, and they did For a Few Dollars More. And it's like sequels are never. This is the third one of the series, and it's the best of the bunch. And I love Sergio Leone. I mean, the way he just takes his time. I mean, it's like a 3.5-hour movie. He'll do like 5 minutes just on like somebody gazing out into something, you know. There's a scene in Once Upon a Time in the West, another Sergio Leone film, where the movie opens up and Henry Fonda's trying to kill a fly for like 3 or 4 minutes. The beginning of the movie. He's just trying to kill a fly. You know, so I don't know. They just don't make movies like that anymore, and I really like it. And do you think he's done directing or starring in movies? What do you think?
Probably done starring, yeah.
You think so?
I think his acting days are over.
Yeah, I think you could. Somebody will make him an offer to be in a movie, not as the star, but as some, like Bradley Cooper's dad or something like that.
I think he'll direct more.
He's definitely going to direct more.
Maybe he'll put himself in a little part in a movie. I mean, I think you'll see him on
screen. He can control the directing. That's the whole point.
Why didn't he not direct Gran Torino? He stars in the movie, and it was kind of like his AD, assistant director on a lot of films, is the one that directed it. Huh. And you said to yourself at the time, maybe he's getting too old to direct, and maybe he wants to take it easy.
Don't kid yourself. His fingerprints were all over that movie as a director.
But then he directs Sully. So, you know, why do you think he didn't direct Gran Torino? Is it too much, you think, of a burden to star in something and direct it at the same time?
I don't know what the decision was. Maybe it was somebody that he felt he also promoted an editor on this film, Sully, who had been working with him since 2006 as an assistant, and he bumped him up to the editor. So maybe he just gave somebody who was a DP or something a chance. And
I'll give you both the Aaron Eckhart complete waste of a great actor and a role in Sully, though. I mean, it's just like,
and badly written. He's making jokes at the NTSB hearings, and that whole scene is just so unbelievable.
And the Laura Linney thing, right? It's just it's just like
poor Laura on a phone.
I'm watching on TV. Are you okay? I'm very upset. This press outside, right? This is her whole part. But that said,
the whole movie they just go, I'll call you back. Okay, call me back. Yeah, I'll call you back
but
later.
Didn't you love Hanks? Hanks was so good.
Hanks is painted into a corner. He's absolutely painted into a corner as an actor.
He does not
have anything to chew on.
You don't think they found a different angle into this thing? I mean, we all know that
they
found an angle, but they didn't exploit it. But
they have him daydreaming.
You didn't say, Jesus, maybe he could have landed the thing in LaGuardia. Maybe he could have done
that. Why didn't he say that? Why didn't he wonder that? You're seeing it in his face.
Now you're rewriting the movie.
No, I'm sure they added tons of stuff that didn't really happen. They go jogging in the middle of the night, and the reporters don't see them.
Actually, I have sound bites. And then one of my sound bites, Tom Hanks talks about working with Sully on the script. Apparently, Sully had an early draft of the script, and he's a stickler for accuracy.
You know, with a guy like Sully, he walked me through the script. He had a big dog-eared, notated version of one of the early drafts. And he was going through it, even scenes I'm not in, because I know you're not in this, Tom, but I want you to know, as though it was the Gutenberg Bible.
And then Tom Hanks talks about how much New York needed an event like this to happen, where a plane actually landed successfully.
And the last thing New York City wanted to experience was a bunch of dead people against the skyline of New York City. They did not want to experience a moment where, guess what, everything fell apart one more time. The opposite happened.
You know, that's something that some people are going to criticize this film for. The screenwriter last night at the premiere was talking about how this is the anti 9/11 movie because the movie doesn't deal with any of that. Like, it deals with a plane that lands correctly instead of one that goes into a building. But guess what? And not to give too much away, there are some planes that go into buildings in this movie, and people are going to be upset about that.
I don't think so. I think that there's a line in the movie where people go, what's the line? New York needs a...
needed this to happen, or needed the good news with an airplane in it, or something.
Yeah, yeah, needed a good story with an airplane.
Yeah, well, we all know that 9/11 happened, and we all know that this happened. So I don't know.
But then to exploit it by at the premiere,
he is getting some flack because I read somewhere in either Hollywood Reporter or therap.com that Clint Eastwood defends use of airplanes into New York buildings.
But maybe he was totally traumatized by that, and maybe he was thinking that, you know, it's hard to.
But if he was, Neil, if he was, and he was dreaming it in his sleep, that's one thing. When he's daydreaming it during the day, that's a guy that's maybe a little disturbed, and this movie doesn't go there. It doesn't want to go there.
Right, I like the movie. You guys, okay, so I say yes, Bill McCuddy says no. And
I say yes.
Say yes.
Wait for it on demand. Wait for it on demand. Do not think you have to go see it in IMAX.
No, I think it's better on a big screen. Okay, so let's move on. So there's a movie that I like.
Another Tom Hanks movie.
There's another. Tom Hanks is in that movie. There's a movie. Okay, so Meg Ryan makes her directorial debut in a movie called Ithaca, which takes place during World War II in the town of Ithaca, and it really centers around this teenage kid who wants to be the fastest bicycle messenger delivering
telegram messenger.
I'm sorry.
Working for the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, and basically that's what he's delivering. He's delivering telegrams that say we regret to, from the State Department saying, we regret to inform you that your son has died.
And he's got a brother who's in the war. So there's a telegram really early in the movie which says, I know how this movie's going to end.
Yeah. Well, everything is telegraphed to you in this. There's no subtlety
absolutely
in this movie. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this movie.
Because we don't recommend it, basically.
Yeah, I just don't think it works.
Sam Shepard's in it. You're going to be... If you see it on demand, it's very much
on demand. He plays a washed-out, drunky kind of guy.
How did Meg do as a director?
Not good.
Not great. She has a good sense of...
It's a William Saroyan. It's based on a William Saroyan novel. Uh-huh. And, she's just... Look, I give her credit for... attempting to tackle this particular thing, and I think it looks good from a cinematography
standpoint.
Right,
she has a great sense of the look.
The costumes and the cinematography and the lensing of the whole thing is good.
And somebody like Robert Altman would have had a great time with the quirkiness of the characters and the offbeat
story. She does not know how to do a narrative structure. The narrative structure on this is just all over the mess. There's narration that I guess is coming right out of the book. I didn't read the book. That's just too overwhelming, too often.
We don't like
on
it.
The thing.
Let's move on.
Here's a movie I liked. It came out in theaters a number of months ago, maybe January. I don't know. But now it's on DVD and it's on demand, and it stars Susan Sarandon, and it's called The Meddler. And she is a mom whose husband just died, and she moves to L.A. to be close to her daughter, played by Rose Byrne. And she just totally is kind of like she's got nothing to do with her life because her husband was kind of, I guess, her whole life. And the husband left her a lot of money. And she's just kind of really intrusive on her daughter's
ding
life.
Dong, I'm here. I brought bagels. Boom.
Are we doing later? Are we going out later?
What'd you get bagels
what are we watching
Los
on
Angeles?
Television?
Mom, I don't answer
tonight?
The phone.
What are you doing before the date?
I don't answer the phone, Mom, because I don't want to talk to you. Well, that's why I came over. I was so worried. It sounds awful, and it really is pretty good.
Well, yeah, it is pretty good. And what's really interesting is it starts out, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm going, this is going to be some cliched, sitcom-y, terrible thing. And Susan Sarandon's got a Brooklyn accent, which I kind of liked, actually. It wasn't this, being from New York, I can tell a good one from a bad one. Not bad. But, this writer-director, her name is Loreen Scafaria. Apparently there's some of this that has an autobiographical edge to it. And, she took something that could have been very cliched, and but that combined with it is Sarandon's show. She's like the whole movie. Makes it interesting. I cared about the character. She starts doing the daughter goes off to New York. She's a TV writer. And she goes, I'm not going to be around for weeks and I'm not reachable. So she starts paying. She meets this woman that she hardly knows, played by Cecily Strong.
They're all her daughter's friends.
Yeah, but she hardly knows the woman.
Right.
I'm going to pay for your wedding. It's a lesbian wedding. I don't have the money. I'm paying for it. And then there's a guy that works at the Genius Bar at the Apple Store, and it's like, you should be a lawyer. You should go to school. And she comes back. She goes, I took your I took your advice. I'm going to go to school, but I got no way to. It's so far away. I'm gonna drive you there. It's a 3 nights a week. I'm gonna go. I'll pick you up. It's just kind of funny and it's interesting. And there is a J.K. Simmons romantic aspect of this, which is kind of cliched that I could have done without.
But. Kind of the Aaron Eckhart part in. Aaron Brockovich, sort of just tacked on, and with a motorcycle.
I don't know.
I like seeing him. I think Sarandon makes seeing him in movies. And Rose Byrne is very underused.
She's deglammed in this.
Yeah.
She's not.
You think she's underused?
Yeah.
I'm
tired of seeing her with Seth Rogen.
But
with somebody
she's funny
else.
In Bridesmaids.
Yeah, she is.
Great in Spy.
But I think she's got potential. She
great in Neighbors.
Neighbors.
Great in Neighbors,
Seth
too.
Rogen. Yeah, but she is really good in Neighbors. I think she's carving out, although you wouldn't, this is not really, she's not really doing a comedic performance in this, but I find her in those other movies that you mentioned, like that I said Bridesmaids, and you said the Neighbors movies.
And Spy.
I think she's very funny.
She's one of the funniest things about Spy. She's,
well, the funniest thing in Spy is Jason Statham.
Jason Statham.
I made this suit. I made 95 of them like that. I
sewed my own arm back on.
He steals
the
movie.
I'm not sure that's even possible.
It's such a, see Spy if you haven't seen Spy. It's on DVD. It's on demand. It's a terrific movie.
So that's our show.
Now, last but not least, we'll talk about this Other People movie with Jesse Plemons.
Oh, quite good.
And
Molly Shannon.
And Molly Shannon from Saturday Night Live. And
lovely woman.
And who knew? Who knew Molly Shannon? She's dying of cancer.
She's dying to act.
Who's another comedy writer, moves back to take care of her, and yeah, she's giving a dramatic performance. It's an amazing performance. Jesse Plemons is the son. I've loved this kid all the way back to Friday Night Lights, and he was great. This is Psycho in Breaking Bad, and he's really good. And he plays, he's gay, and the father who's also very good in the movie, played by Bradley
Whitford.
Bradley Whitford, is that how you?
Yeah, the guy from West Wing.
Yeah, Bradley Whitford. He's good, and. I like the movie. You know, there's small moments in the movie that really work.
This was a huge hit at Sundance, or it got a lot of buzz. And I think it's a really good film. I think Molly Shannon is going to get an Independent Spirit nomination.
Well, since we influenced the Oscars now, since the BFCA and the Critics' Choice is the first one out of the box, if we vote for her, then we can bring it back into prominence.
There you go.
But, you know.
I think they should campaign for her. I think she's definitely going to.
How could she not get to you, Molly Shannon? I defy you, really. I mean, she has cancer, and she's going about her life. She refuses the chemo at a certain point because it's too painful. And you know she's going to die. And every once in a while, she just breaks down. And how does that not – I mean, and it's not
hammy. She can't
hammy.
Talk at one point because she's had so much radiation. It goes – the script is laid out in a 12-month period, January, February. It goes – you know, and every now and then we're told it's moved on a month. And you see her deteriorating and – she's so good in the wigs, in the emotion.
When she pulls off a wig, she's in a coffee shop, and she's wearing a wig, and she doesn't want to be cremated because, you know, I don't like fire. And Bradley Whitford keeps, I don't know, I guess it's cheaper. We don't want to go through. I don't want to be cremated. And she just pulls the wig off, and she's completely bald, and it's like, oh, my, oh wow.
Yeah, you know I'm tired of wearing this thing. It's there are also a lot of small, really funny moments.
The moment with Jesse Plemons, whose father – played again by Bradley Whitford, will not come up to his New York City apartment because he can't accept the fact that he's gay. And the ex-boyfriend, who he's not telling the family, is now his ex-boyfriend, goes along with the masquerade that they're still together, and then they spend the night together. And they're just talking in bed, and they're having this really, like, open discussion, not about their relationship, just about when I was a kid and I was 14 and nobody knew that, you know, he was telling that nobody knew that
right.
He was gay. And he's talking about, what was he reading, JCPenney ads or something?
Right, what he would masturbate to.
Was it JCPenney?
It was a JCPenney, like,
and I'm going, like, who writes? It was a great combination of writing and acting. Like, who writes a scene like this? And it was just hysterical, you know? And then they start to, like, fool around, and he's like, think that I'm the JCPenney guy or something like that.
Yeah. There's also a completely authentic, he's part of a stand-up kind of Upright Citizens Brigade.
Yes, that was good, too.
Improv group. And they go to see him in the improv group.
At Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
And they do a very realistic looking, so often that stuff is badly handled in movies. But this feels really genuine. In fact, the whole movie feels really genuine.
Yes, it does. And Bill, who also dabbles in stand-up comedy, Bill McCuddy on the side, and I'm a big comedy aficionado, I agree. I see a lot of things where they try to recreate comedy. Very rarely do they try to recreate improv stuff. But
well, Birbiglia just had a movie out that will get on demand very shortly.
No one will see that. I want to see that. Yeah.
I hear it's good.
Yeah, me too.
Key Peele is in it, I think, or Peele's in it.
All right, so next week we're doing Snowden, which stars who? Who's
Ward, playing Snowden? Warn the SNA.
Who's playing Snowden?
And tell Jesse, Oliver Stone.
Is it the guy with Gordon-Levitt?
Gordon-Levitt, yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Some of the three names.
Oh, you were asking who is Snowden? Yeah,
yes,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes, I am. And we're also going to talk about a movie called Cardboard Boxer. And we're going to talk about a movie. Now, well, who's in Cardboard Boxer? That's an interesting...
I'm worried about it.
Who's
in it,
Phil?
Looks like it's going to be... it feels to me like it's going to be kind of...
It's with Thomas Hayden Church and Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
And it's about homeless people who are recruited to box each other for money.
Terrence Howard is crazy. Have you ever interviewed him?
Yeah, he's nuts.
He's just crazy.
I interviewed him for the first...
Scary. Around women.
Iron Man film.
He's scary around women.
And then
women.
He got fired with the first Iron Man film, didn't he?
Yeah.
And they replaced him. Who'd they replace
him
with?
He's weird. Really
Don
weird.
Cheadle.
Don Cheadle. You got to love Don Cheadle. And I like that movie that Don Cheadle just did where he played Miles Davis.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What's it called? Miles Ahead?
Miles
Ahead.
I think
so. So we'll do that, and we're going to do a bigger splash next week, and we're going to
It's almost too much show.
Yes, it's almost too much show. And we're going to do one more movie, which I'll tell you about, which is... It's not Bridget Jones's Baby. Sorry, we're not talking about that, but maybe.
I think I'm going to a lunch for that, though, next week.
Money so Monster. We're going to do Money Monster.
Oh, yeah, the Clooney, Jodie Foster movie.
There you go. So thanks for sitting around talking with us. What do we do here every week, Bill McCuddy?
It seems like we waste a lot of time.
We do.
No,
what else do we do?
We watch the movies that you don't.
No,
we
watch. We
watch the bad movies. I don't know. We
watch
movies.
The bad movies.
So you don't have to.
Yeah, I got to tell this guy his own signature line. That's pretty crazy. Bill McCuddy, before we go, what is your big commercial line that you do? That if somebody's watching TV and they're flipping around.
Ask your doctor about Plavix.
That's right.
Plavix not for everyone.
That's
Excedrin Migraine, 100% neurologist recommended.
There you go, and that's it. Thanks for sitting around talking movies. And,
AMCO, double A beep beep MCL.
All right, somebody stop this guy. All right, well, listen, catch us next week. Have a good week, everybody.